This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us, for open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to Rewind to Dynamite here in the new era. We've got our logos on the mat. We've got a drone that we've invested in. We're all set, Way.
See all the celebrities that are sitting out around here in my room, your basement, John?
Yeah, Fred Penner's over there. We've got...
I think we actually have Wolf Radel here, and we can actually key him this time.
Maybe if we have time. Okay. Well, welcome one, welcome all here on the Post Wrestling Cafe for those that are watching live, and an extended hello to those listening after the fact on the free portion. We welcome all of you to Rewind to Dynamite. So to reiterate to everybody, we are undergoing changes here at Post Wrestling going into effect tonight, and this will be our new format where we will be live for our Post Wrestling Cafe members. You can sign up at any level, and you will always have access immediately after Raw, after Dynamite, and following SmackDown, as we will continue Friday, Monday, forever. And, of course, we will still be making the show-specific reviews available to everybody late in the evening, early the next morning. But for those of you here on the cafe, you're getting the shows unchanged from previous iterations, which will contain the news of the day, feedback and questions, and of course the review of said show.
So again, you know, for the last time, we're always trying to evolve our own business, and I think our free shows have tended to become a little bit more bloated, but it also doesn't mean that the content that we're producing for those bloated shows is not valuable. In fact, it's quite the opposite, because the people who choose to really like us actually want us to go often longer. So we're keeping that in the cafe for all of our post-wrestling cafe supporters. But those of you who are free listeners listening to us after the fact, you still get your show reviews. In fact, you're going to get your SmackDown reviews now on the free feed coming up on Friday night/Saturday morning. So we continue to thank you. But those of you who are patrons, we really thank you by giving you extended editions of these shows where we will discuss news later on. So what are the topics we're talking about later, John?
Well, later on tonight, we are going to be discussing a story breaking from the New York Times earlier today about TKO and Saudi Arabia partnering to form a boxing promotion. What is this going to look like for TKO getting into the world of boxing? We're also going to talk about The Rock's promo and appearance at NXT on Tuesday night. Several big title changes on that show on Tuesday night. We're going to go over a bunch of New Japan announcements, and we're going to be talking about ratings, including a big number pulled clearly by Eddie Thorpe on Tuesday night on the CW. So we will talk about all of that and more coming up later on. Also want to make mention that over the next couple of days, we're going to be dropping some bombs on the Post Wrestling Cafe beginning Thursday, as we have got Rewind Away number 173. We're going back to 1989. And what are we chatting about on Thursday, Way?
We are going to be talking about the Flair Steamboat Trilogy. Technically, a few more matches than that. We will be talking about not just the three famous matches that they had, but also a house show match that maybe doesn't get discussed as much that was captured on video. So this was a choice from Jake from the Windy City. And if you go to our feedback section at our forum, forum.postwrestling.com, you can find links to all these matches to watch for free.
And as well, on the cafe on Friday, breaking news. If you are a new member to the Post Wrestling Cafe, or if you want to jump on board, Friday, I will be dropping the 13th annual MMA prediction show.
What?
I predict that Ariel Helwani will make his return to Post Wrestling this coming Friday. That will be up for members of the Post Wrestling Cafe this coming Friday. So look out for that. And of course, all your favorites, including Collision Course on Saturday and Sunday night on the cafe, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson, after a whirlwind of Japanese coverage, will go stateside for Battle in the Valley from San Jose, California, with a review coming your way Sunday evening. So a packed couple of days for Post Wrestling Cafe members. But we are jumping into things immediately, and we are going to a venue that I have always wanted to attend, the F&M Bank Arena in Clarksville, Tennessee, and 2,485 patrons got their opportunity to go to said arena on Wednesday night for the return of Kenny Omega, and this featured our commentary duo, well, our threesome of Excalibur, Matt Menard, and Ian Riccaboni. No Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone on assignment tonight.
On assignment, yeah. Shall we start speculating about another missing announcer from a show?
Listen, I have no idea. This could have been just a pre-planned event. There could have been a conflict. It is certainly going to arise suspicion. I mean, maybe the man had a plumbing issue. Maybe his shower broke.
That could be the assignment. Fix your shower. So you might be able to offer your shower for other announcers.
So it was interesting to hear, because Excalibur and Riccaboni, like, you have two, you know, very seasoned play-by-play announcers. And I didn't think they, like, got in each other's way too much. I thought that the two of them, sometimes that can be very rocky with two of them. But I thought the commentary was just fine tonight.
I always enjoy Ian. I think he's fantastic. So
he was heavily involved in this show, from MJF to even did it, felt comfortable enough to his Willow freestyle as well for Max simulcast.
That's to be expected at this point for every Willow match.
Well, we are kicking things off with Will Ospreay and Buddy Matthews, and this is stemming from the Continental Classic, where Will Ospreay had defeated babyface Brody King, now facing babyface Buddy Matthews. And Ospreay is, of course, recovering from World's End, those two brutal matches that he had in one evening. And it's a great start here. Ospreay is just coming at him with all these kicks. Matthews is getting out of the way. You can see these two really just getting into the flow of things instantly. It builds up. Matthews hits a tope con hero, and then they trade blows on the edge, and Oscutter gets caught, and Ospreay is thrown off the apron, landing face first on the, quote, solid oak desk. What wrestling company would invest in solid oak for this particular item that is typically a weapon? Let's get the solid oak version.
I'm guessing a company that doesn't want to be replacing its announce tables so often,
Let's get the titanium desk. That would be great for everybody.
I will say it is an interesting choice, because the announce table break is such a, expected trope and convenient trope, we should say, about professional wrestling. And AEW has essentially opted to not use that at all.
Oh, that's the styrofoam desk. They also mention Brody King just competed at Wrestle Dynasty over the weekend. We got way more Wrestle Dynasty mentioned tonight than all the previous weeks combined.
I mean, don't you think that's, like, at this point kind of expected of whatever this relationship is, you know. Clearly they have something going on where they're not allowed to promote perhaps another streaming service or something like that, you know, but they could talk about the results afterwards.
Yes, afterward. I'm looking just if I'm the fan that is, I don't know how many people could not have been aware of all of this, but sometimes I think we also are in a bit of a bubble. But I mean, if I was just a fan of this show and I see this video package, I'm like, you didn't tell me Kenny Omega was wrestling? This looks like a great match, this highlight. Guy's all bloody afterwards. The Young Bucks are over there. You didn't tell me any of this.
Yeah. That's always going to be the argument for AEW, okay? Like, do they do enough to serve the person who's not plugged into the internet, who doesn't really know all of these guys from New Japan Pro Wrestling? But I would also say, like, that sort of fan probably wouldn't know any of the matches that were on tonight either. Like, what, you know, again, for the sickos, right? Like, this is both a criticism and I think also a point of sometimes to be celebrated, you know, for AEW.
I think at the very least, the next dynasty, whatever you want to call it, I think it would behoove both sides to maybe let's sit down, let's figure out a more, like, even Kidani was stating, like, this took place maybe at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
If you have these restrictions of what you can promote, it really doesn't matter what time you do this during the year. Yeah. But this was hardly, like, I'm sure, as envisioned of what this was going to be when it was first announced. Anyway, as we get back to things, a really great match that's building between these two. Hidden Blade gets ducked by Matthews, and then Ospreay eats this big knee, but then finishes with the Hidden Blade. Oscutter gets caught, and Matthews lifts him up, and it's like an inverted GTS where the knee goes to the back of Ospreay's head, and then a stomp, huge near fall here. Ospreay recovers, Styles clash, which I had no doubt after winning the one match, the semifinal on World's End, that Styles clash is always going to be a believable end to a match now, I think.
For now, until he maybe lets people kick out a bit too much, but yeah, for now, definitely.
For now, he can ride this wave, and then he hits the Hidden Blade, and Matthews is applauded by Ospreay before he pins him in 12 minutes and 40 seconds, and first of all, the match way.
Well, first of all, I got to say, I thought this match to start off Dynamite was such a great antidote to the, I think, over-corporatized version of pro wrestling that we got on Monday and even a little bit on Tuesday, John. Like, where I, specifically on Monday, I definitely felt like quality of action came, took a backseat to both star power and advertising and just messaging, you know, tonight. I thought this was just straight up, like, great action, you know, with names that I don't think Ari Emanuel would have ever heard of. No need for, like...
In fairness, I don't think Ari Emanuel knew any of the names he watched on Monday either, okay?
He knew The Rock. He knew John Cena, I'm sure. Yeah. There's, like, no need for all of that, like, fanfare, like, drones or, like, really sort of any, like, bullshit like that, which, like, I think is necessary. Sometimes you need all that bullshit. But it was just, we got almost too much of it. And I think in hindsight, I really do look back at that Raw at a certain level of distaste, you know, for me. Because I think as a quality show with interesting narrative, despite the fact that it had a lot of, like, sort of, like, big storyline ending moments, it just felt ultimately very unsatisfying. So it was nice to at least get, like, what felt like a very normal edition of a pro wrestling show for a professional wrestling fan tonight, starting with a match like this, which is about the best way you can deliver for a wrestling fan. So I thought it was an excellent, excellent match. What about you, John?
It was a tremendous match to start things off. Just to touch on your point, like, there was a lot of that criticism I saw from Monday. If you were, like, in a creative director for AEW, and we were talking about this, myself and Brandon, earlier today, is that do you almost lean into that to AEW to make it feel more more intimate, more of, like, going away from that, or does that run the risk? You don't want to be perceived as minor league either, that you're stripping down so much and that you're looking like a product that is so inferior to this extraordinary production that is WWE. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I would say, like, there were enough people that were, like, looking at, you know, AEW can find an avenue here that it is something different than WWE, and that doesn't necessarily have to mean it feels like it's low rent either.
Yeah. I think they're already very aware of this, you know, ability to perhaps differentiate themselves by their tagline. You know, we're the best wrestle. Like, they know that they have the advantage over WWE in terms of just, like, belt-to-belt action. I think, like, you know, looking at a lot of, like, best and worst of lists might already be an indicator of that. Just simply having somebody like Will Ospreay and a Kenny Omega on their roster. Like, or will already at least allow them to have that argument. I definitely think being more intimate is what they should be doing anyway. But you know, like, going back to maybe what you're asking about, like, not, you know, wanting to maybe emphasize an intimacy or emphasis on, like, in-ring quality without feeling like second rate. Let me ask you, did New Japan ever feel second rate against the WWE? During, you know, it's more peak years, like several years earlier.
Yeah, it didn't have that minor league quality to it. No,
but because the people that it was appealing to knew that, despite not having a giant Titantron or amazing pyro like every single night, the audience who was watching it knew that the quality of the wrestling and the quality of the storytelling was superior to what was being presented. That's something that they have to promote and they have to find. And let's be honest, that the storytelling is an aspect that I think they do have to improve on, because they've been criticized as much as they've been celebrated, whereas the other company has just been celebrated. This week was, like, in my opinion, at least for the hardcores, a week of unsatisfying content produced by the WWE that I felt this episode definitely, like, contrasted well against.
Well, then... Will Ospreay and Buddy Matthews both revealed what beer companies they are affiliated with. Ospreay, then we had quite the moment here. He puts over the talent of Buddy Murphy. Matthews. It's like, oh, poor Ospreay. Well, poor Buddy, man. I was like, God, is Buddy Murphy that ingrained in people? Is that one really, like,
Murphy
just,
and Matthews are maybe too similar, and I mean that's obviously the intent, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You don't have this problem with Alex Zane and Ari Sterling. That was a terrible 205 Live name that he had. There were some awful 205 Live names. Trey Baxter. Anyway, he has admired Buddy Matthews from afar, regardless of surname. And says that, I've wrestled you, I've wrestled Brody King, the two of you don't need a leader, and I see gold in your future, perhaps even singles gold, and offers to be in Buddy's corner if he ever needs it. And the two shake hands, and Will was all about making friends on tonight's show and having potential allies. He's building a stable by the end of tonight.
Could be his New Year's resolution, you know, to, like, invest in relationships and to just, you know, like, be nicer, you know.
Maybe after he called on the crowd to rally me through this. I need you. The fans came up short, so he's got to find better allies than these fans that
I bet you he was inspired by Dwayne Johnson, you know, just coming back, dropping the final boss thing, and just deciding to hug everybody.
Well, you know what? Sometimes you just got to drop those grudges over time. You know, you live and learn. Wrestle Dynasty video.
Hold on a second. So this House of Black thing, obviously teasing a House of Black split of some sort. I believe Fightful had a report about Malakai Black, which I'm very afraid of discussing, because anytime I feel like we talk about Malakai Black status,
he'll have
status,
an Instagram video up tomorrow addressing Wei Ting.
He's going to go live and he will talk about how we're all overreacting. But yeah, according to Fightful, Black may be finishing up with AEW. So, this is not definitive.
Wait, it was just a good match he had with Adam Cole, okay? It's just two guys complimenting each other on a good match. Haven't you ever seen that before?
Well, of course, yeah. We shall await for more word before we
This is the most complex individual in pro wrestling, and I'm here for it.
It's long-term storytelling, yeah.
Well, there you have it. There was a recap of Wrestle Dynasty where we got to see Kenny, we got to see the Young Bucks, and definitely a tease of the Young Bucks coming to Dynamite soon with the tag title. So it seems like it's a pretty soon, and a bit of a cryptic line later that we would also get that I think could be tied to the Bucks.
Joe Montana here. In my football days, I knew the importance of a strong defense. Now I'm sharing how you can help defend your health against pneumococcal pneumonia and invasive pneumococcal disease. Are you 50 or older like me? The CDC now recommends vaccination against pneumococcal disease. Even if you're healthy, your age puts you at increased risk and over 6 times greater risk of hospitalization with pneumococcal pneumonia than adults under 50. Schedule your appointment today at vaxassist.com.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People vs. GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com. Private Party come out with a group of women, and they made history on Saturday. Like, they did. Please tell me. They defended their tag titles on the very first Collision simulcast. I'm like, this wasn't even your first simulcast of the week, and they're here to celebrate. So I guess the Rock and Roll Express kind of made history as well. I mean, to close the first ever Collision simulcast.
Pretty much, yeah, technically
everybody. Made history.
Yeah.
A lot of history made on Saturday. Mm. So they are interrupted by the Hurt Syndicate, and MVP goes to make a toast to Private Party and then hands it off to Lashley, who says, "Here's to the Hurt Syndicate taking those tag titles." And listen, I know the Golden Globes just ended, but man, we had some award winners here because these women and their reaction to this line by Bobby Lashley was like he had just announced that Private Party, your services are no longer required here in AEW. They were aghast at this line. It was so ridiculous. Yeah, so it looks like Lashley and Benjamin are going for the tag titles, and I don't know where Lashley is going, but wherever he's going, he's being booked exceptionally dominant as he goes toward this.
Obviously, it would be the tag
titles. I think he could win the tag titles on his own based on this.
He kind of could. But, you know, Shelton's been booked really well as well. So as a tag team, I think they're certainly a lot more interesting than Private Party. And I hate to say it, you know, like Private Party have been pretty invisible in this tag title run. They had a great story teasing a breakup as they won it from the Bucks. But since then, I feel like AEW's just not really done anything with them, or at least nothing to really kind of build my interest in them. So I think the promise of a Hurt Syndicate title reign instead, it feels a lot more inspiring, you know, for a tag division to be built around.
That takes us to Lashley and Mark Briscoe with MVP on commentary. I cannot recall such a one-sided match involving like a semi-star here, I would say, in Mark Briscoe. Not the most protected guy, but definitely not like a schlub on the show either. This match was 95% Lashley destroying Briscoe. Briscoe doesn't even get his first offense in until after the picture-in-picture break. Lashley then goes to the floor, and Briscoe is hidden under the ring. So when he lifts up the ring, he's nailed with a chair by Briscoe. MVP calls for a disqualification, manages the froggy bow. Lashley kicks out at 1, spears him, slams him, hurt lock, and it's over in 9 minutes and 8 seconds as Benjamin and Lashley continue the attack when Private Party enter, further sending us toward this tag title direction. And yes, all I will say is that Lashley, I mean, they are going exceptionally hard with him. Exceptionally.
As they should be. They have a lot invested in him, and he's somebody who I think, like, could be a difference maker if promoted the right way, you know? So, yeah, I think sure, sucks for like Mark Briscoe and Mark Briscoe fans, but I think Lashley presents a more important long-term investment, and you need to have a guy like that beat somebody established like a Mark Briscoe in order to hopefully, you know, feel big enough. So I thought it was a really good showcase for Lashley. Mark Briscoe took a great beating and had a nice little comeback with a chair, which I thought MVP sold really well on commentary, as he was freaking out that Briscoe was able to use the chair and the referee didn't see it and he wanted to call for cheating. So very productive win, I thought, for the Hurt Syndicate.
The next match was the Casino Gauntlet, and this has to have been the people that showed up for this Casino Gauntlet, they did not leave unhappy. Mm-hmm. They didn't fly all the way to Clarksville, Tennessee, and were left backstage. That we're aware of, because we got 11 entrants in this one, a match that went in excess of 26 minutes, kicking off with Jay White and Hangman Page reigniting. It's pretty much been ongoing since Wrestle Dream, and we see the Buckshot, the Blade Runner, and Deadeye all attempted and countered early on. Third is Wheeler Yuta, and the best the announcers could do was, well, if Yuta wins, it ensures that the title stays with the Death Riders, and he is there, I guess, as a advocate for Moxley, although they didn't really, I think, give a real convincing reason why this guy was even in this match, but there he was. He was there to play spoiler by the end. Ricochet is fourth, but when he comes out, they play Swerve's music, but it's a swerve, and out comes Ricochet. No scissors, and actually not too much follow-up on that angle from last week.
Swerve is gone, so that's about it. Should he?
I mean,
really...
we saw this man like stabbed nearly to death last week. I think maybe requires a little of a. By the way, he's hospitalized.
I guess it's assumed he's as disabled as a Darby Allin might be. You know, he's been stabbed. Yeah.
Did you happen to catch Javon Evans' update on NXT Tuesday night with his broken jaw?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the best promo of the year.
You got to get creative, I guess.
Yes. So this, of course, was the tease of Swerve and Hangman, but then Ricochet is out as Excalibur, who witnessed this attempted murder just feet from him last week, notes that Ricochet last week proved that scissor beats paper. Yes. Ricochet and Yuta are working together. Page is sent into the ring post. Fifth is Adam Cole, managed a Panama Sunrise onto Ricochet for a two count. Sixth is our TNT champion, Daniel Garcia, who stacked up Cole, Page, and White for punches in the corner. Seventh is Powerhouse Hobbs, and they explain the history where it was against Moxley last year that he injured his knee back in April, and Hobbs is Ricochet stands up to Hobbs and just gets sent to the floor. Then White is next, and Hobbs is just plowing through everyone. Roderick Strong was in eighth, so we're building up the Undisputed Kingdom here. Lance Archer is in ninth, and he delivered choke slams all around to everyone and then had a big showdown with Hobbs, allowing everyone to chant for meat. 10th is Kyle O'Reilly. So we now have three members of the group, and they start working together. And our final entrant here in Tennessee, Jeff Jarrett. But he can't even get to the ring because Yuta, who's just been staking himself by the entrance, jumps Jarrett, and they fight to the back. Hobbs clotheslines Archer out of the ring, and after absorbing kicks to his knees by Kyle O'Reilly, he catches O'Reilly with a big spinebuster, pinning O'Reilly in 26-33, and it will be Jon Moxley against Powerhouse Hobbs for the title in Cincinnati next week at Maximum Carnage. And Renee is tasked with interviewing Hobbs in the ring and asks his thoughts about facing Moxley next week. He says, "We're going to shoot, brother." And says that Moxley brought him into AEW, but next week he plans to shock the world. And I'm going to make Jon Moxley my bitch. And Renee at least sold this as like, that seemed like a little over the line. She didn't just have smiled at this line. So,
she plays it perfectly.
She plays it very well. Where it would have been ridiculous if she just had like a smile on her face during this.
She perfectly like evokes, I'm bothered, but I'm trying to stay professional, you know?
So Moxley and Hobbs, next week in Cincinnati, which is, an interesting location, given it is Moxley's hometown.
I guess it'll be interesting to see like the like who the crowd cheers. I'm assuming Moxley, but maybe he'll cut such a big promo. Actually, you know what? Yeah, I'm interested to see at least how they play it. You know, Hobbs, I wouldn't necessarily say is a hot character, but they have the story of him being injured by Moxley, and who's to say they can't use the opportunity to put him into a story? So we'll see how that goes. I really love the Casino Gauntlet. You know, it really is. It's a great match type because it gives you the surprise element of the Royal Rumble, but allows far more dynamic action, allows people to actually wrestle because you're not bound to the confines of having to stay in the ring. You're not even bound by the specific number of participants or the intervals, which is, I think, part of the brilliance of it. So I thought another thoroughly entertaining Casino Gauntlet with great atmosphere that they kept to, like, pretty interesting participants, I would say, for the 10. And they did, they were very productive with, especially, I want to say, well, the Undisputed Kingdom, you got to see them actually wrestle as a team. But also Jeff Jarrett, who got a great reaction for, first of all, his entrance and also being taken out by Yuta.
Ian Riccaboni, after the break, is with Jeff Jarrett in the ring and stated, "We were all hoping for the storybook ending tonight in Tennessee." And Jarrett says that he's got to ask himself if he still has it in him to climb that mountain. And before he can go on, MJF interrupts and he instructs, "Ian Riccaboni, you Bible-thumping prick, get out of my ring." And he calls himself the greatest champion of all time, and he wants his Triple B back. Jarrett, you failed tonight due to Wheeler Yuta, and says none of the men in this match are worthy of holding my belt except for you, Jeff. And he explains that Jarrett is so old, his dad told him he was a fan of Jarrett when he was a kid, and the clock is ticking on Jeff's career, and MJF reveals that Jarrett's contract that he assigned with AEW is only for 1 year. So we do get the length of this deal. Why? Because that's all Jarrett had as an option. That's all pro wrestling thinks he has to give. 1 year to prove that he's still got it. So I guess we have to believe maybe there's an option that can be picked up.
Yeah, he could always sign another year extension, I guess.
MJF says, "I can help you become champion in exchange for me becoming the first contender." And Jarrett thinks about it and says, "You know what, Max? You learn more from your failures than your successes. And here, we call someone like you a one-hit wonder. And I've been to rock bottom, not just in this business, but in my life. And I like it there because I'm not afraid to fight my way to the top. I'm going to make the most out of 2025, and I don't need you, you entitled prick." And out walks Jeff Jarrett, and probably something long-term involving these two that they will continue with. And continues the Jeff Jarrett story of 2025.
So I was critical last week of his big retirement tease, only to just announce an unnamed length of contract that he had signed. I thought it was kind of unbecoming of a babyface to just lead us through those emotions without like really being prompted. If that was all done in service of this segment, then I totally take it back because I thought the segment was excellent. You know, either way, I am totally on board now with this Jeff Jarrett story because I thought this segment set up his year long story excellently. First, I love the explanations that they gave for MJF not being in the gauntlet. He's lazy and he wants an easier path to win than to have to go through the Casino Gauntlet. He doesn't even want to face Moxley, which, you know,
he wants to face Jarrett. Like, that's exactly his easy path to the title.
His scheme makes total sense. It's far easier to beat Jeff Jarrett for the championship than it is to beat Moxley. Now, how is he going to help Jeff Jarrett beat Jon Moxley for the championship? I mean, it doesn't really matter now. But anyway, I love that explanation. In the same breath, even if he was being sarcastic, MJF managed to remind the audience of Jarrett's accolades. He's a 12-time champion, 2-time Hall of Famer, just like treated him like a legend. And this was a crowd, obviously, that, you know, emphasized and amplified that. They, worked here to give us the time limit contract being 1 year, which ticks the clock for all of us to savor a lot of these moments the way we are with the way we did with Sting and the way we are with Cena and Tanahashi. So, a lot of tears, I think, will be flowed. I thought Jarrett's comeback was among like the best speeches I've heard from him on this particular run. First of all, One Hit Wonder totally got over with this crowd. You know, they were chanting it. I think it's a sick burn. I also loved his continued usage of the mountaintop as this sort of like metaphor for this, his final story, essentially. Obviously, it fits with the nickname, but, you know, it's also perfect for the story. Him admitting that he's comfortable at the bottom and that he's comfortable there because it offers him a place to climb back up is actually like inspirational, I think, especially if you know his real life story and what he's actually gone through in his real life, you know, like, you know, just not like, just to mention like what I'm aware of is like Owen, his wife, you know, passing away from cancer, his own battle with
sobriety.
Alcoholism.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. It's like knowing all of that, I thought he like gave a great mission statement, not just for his year, but like kind of encompassed his almost like life struggles like really well in this segment.
Yeah, I have an overall like feeling of AEW that I really have no issue at all with the story with Jeff Jarrett. And I think that there's like, I think like it's fine to have like this thread, one that you can needle throughout the year. But I do feel like there is a perception on AEW that you are focusing on a lot of older acts, and it's not so much an issue with one over the other. It's more so just the totality of them when you are using an Adam Copeland in a main position, and you are featuring Chris Jericho, and you are featuring and you're bringing in a Bobby Lashley, and he's getting the big run, and Jeff Jarrett. And again, like, I think you can defend any one of these. It's just there is that perception issue at the same time. And you are also trying to create all of these newer stars. They're trying to do a lot of different things. And I do find it noticeable on AEW as they are. You know, it's just they have a lot of people under contract, and there's only so much time to go around as well.
I think they need to, you know, continue to strike a balance, which I think they do manage to. But, you know, I also think like it worked for Sting, having Jarrett attached to somebody that can join him for the ride to be built up, you know, that's younger, I think would maybe help some of those criticisms. You know, the way Darby Allin benefited from a Sting retirement. I'm hoping Jarrett can help somebody else too. But, you know, like, if there's a story to be told, if the guy is actually retiring, I mean, I love those stories if told well.
Out comes Cope to address Mox for taking out Bryan Danielson, for taking out Darby Allin, who we haven't seen now in 2 weeks, which is a lifetime for Darby Allin. And you committed, though, the ultimate sin. You tried to take out FTR. And no one has fought through what I've had to stand in this ring. I will die on that hill to defend that. And before we get into his examples, weigh his new t-shirt.
Rated R Legend. L-E-D-G-E-N-D. All right.
Legend.
I mean, sure. Why not?
Go with
cool.
It.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's his nickname. It's just, it's one of like probably 15 shirts he's got on sale.
Some people did joke that he should have just renamed himself Ledge.
At this point, I mean, with the criticisms that I've seen for Cope, maybe that wouldn't have been such a bad choice. He's really not bothered by it. You know, we'll all get used to it soon enough, but man, people seem to.
It's just, I don't care that much about name changes. Everyone gets used to them. We have a lot of goofy names that we just take as you know, just second nature. He broke his neck against Eddie Guerrero, but I continued to wrestle for 20 more minutes and won. I broke my leg against Malachi Black, but I got up. I wrestled for 10 more minutes and won. So Moxley, what can you do that hasn't been done to me before? So the Death Riders come out to presumably answer what they can do to him. But then FTR is there to attack them, and we get a big brawl, including Cope and Moxley in the ring. And Shafir grabs onto Cope, and then he grabs her but gets struck by the briefcase from Pac, and they are outnumbered. Moxley applies a bulldog choke, and then they pull out their plastic bag. They're going grocery shopping on Cope's head. But then Powerhouse Hobbs comes out. The Death Riders retreat. And I like this in terms of just injecting Hobbs into the segment as well. But it really does feel as, you know, Hobbs is the TV match and Copeland feels like probably the match. I mean, maybe you could put it in Australia, but it could easily be that LA show, the Revolution show, but that's 2 months away.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I think either one works, honestly. Like, if they have Cope challenge at Grand Slam, it doesn't mean they can't do a rematch, you know, if the match is good enough and enough people demand it, if they have a bigger story to tell. So, first of all, I want to say, like, plastic bags aren't that easy to find these days, John, okay?
You gotta pay, like, and you're going to have to pay.
Yeah, you got to pay 5 cents.
Yeah.
Reusable bags, I don't think you can really, like, they don't have the suffocation effect of what they
reusable
have.
Reusable
so.
Bag.
Yeah, so.
It's hard to suffocate people in this
This is, you know, starting to become an expensive spot, I think. You know, every time they pay 5 cents for one of these bags.
Just grab a pair of scissors.
Yeah, scissors.
Always find a good, sharp pair of scissors.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed all of this. You know, I think it had the seriousness that we want out of, like, a world title program. I did notice how, like, or maybe I should say I was maybe slightly disappointed because when they announced, or at least when they started teasing this Mox and Cope program, I had hoped for Copeland with his level of ability.
Hope for Cope?
I had hoped for Cope with his level of, you know, promo ability to, like, give us some addressing of exactly, like, what the Death Riders are after and, like, John Moxley's, like, you know, MO of exactly what this whole thing was supposed to be. He kind of straight, like, stayed away from that entirely. Like, this just suddenly became, oh, you don't think those guys could win the championship? Well, I can win the championship, you know? And maybe that was, like, done because of the criticisms of the storyline. Maybe they're trying to simplify it to just be about the title, not just, and not, like, these reasons and, like, a potential higher power that they all might be working for and all that.
Yeah, I had a lot of hope for Cope, but they gave him too much rope, and the logic was, nope.
Of course. Nigel had like, was breaking, you know, on when he had when he went on a similar run.
Mariah May addresses the Casino Gauntlet. We are doing another gauntlet next week for the women, and she wants the women to make history. Dance for me like the marionettes you are before I cut your strings and burn you alive, which is another way to a lot easier than a plastic bag as well. And she hears Harley Cameron screaming in the background, and this leads to Cameron proposing an appetizer for Collision, hot girl graps. And of course, this is not going to be for a title match, and they will have a non-title match on Saturday.
Non-title match on Saturday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because I think I heard Excalibur earlier in the show say, it's 2025, the records reset. I'm like, records? Yeah. Like, it's not like you've relied on these records at all, but they do still exist if, you know, in some sort of sense. Yeah, they clearly recognize Cameron's talent to continue to feature her, and she's gaining a lot of, like, just acclaim, I would say, from, you know, the audience. So I hope that this is a continued relationship between the two, because I think having Cameron be, like, May 2nd, it is a perfect way to advance her.
Okay, yeah, it's a way to go. I think there's so much you could do with Harley Cameron. Like, you could throw her into any role, and I think she's going to run with it, and has done a very good job with what she's been given.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Tony Storm, Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale. The winner will be in the number one position in next week's Casino Gauntlet for the title shot in Australia. And a fast-paced match that they had here. Willow catapults Storm between the legs of Statlander. And that's how we went to the commercial break.
This was quite the commercial break, too.
Yes. Yes, this was. Yes. This was not seen on Netflix on Monday, but a potential spot for all commercial break spots in the future.
You mean this crotch spot?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is a new twist on the crotch spot.
I was more so speaking about the content in the commercial break too, you know, because I believe, like, so what, on Max, they don't get these picture-in-picture anymore, right?
No, that wasn't the case last week. I assume it wasn't, or it was the same this week.
Oh, I'm sorry for the people on Max, because they missed quite a hell of a commercial break wrestling 3 minutes here, okay? So you had Stat...
Was all the Statmares in the break?
Yeah.
Oh.
You had Statlander and Chris continue taking turns delivering headlocks to Tony Storm, okay, which was like, you know, fun. But then Tony starts snapmaring the shit out of everybody. You know, we got snapmare, 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 snapmare. She goes to the outside, more snapmares on the outside, double snapmare. She took these two to Snapmare City, and it was awesome.
You could argue she was the mayor of Snapmare City.
You could, yes.
So we come back from break, and Storm shoves Statlander into Willow, and we've got like 15 minutes left in the show, and Ian confirms that Kenny Omega has arrived. I was like, well, that's great. I'm glad he is here for the last segment of the show. There's a pounce to Statlander, and then Willow hits both with cannonballs, a DVD on Storm, only getting a two count. Willow hits a double release German, and then after multiple standing switches, Chris sends Willow out to the floor, and she hits Storm with Wednesday Night Fever. So Chris Statlander will enter first. I thought a really good match that these two had.
Really, really strong three-way match. You know, I continue to be so impressed by Statlander and Willow as in-ring great.
They used to be best
wrestlers.
Friends.
Yeah, well, I mean, we might be getting a bit of a reunion, John. That seems to be what they're teasing here. This match I felt like was mostly about that particular story, with Tony Storm coming in, working a lot of her gimmick, which I do quite enjoy, and some really fun coordinated three-way spots. They had some, again, like really fun interactions, like what we saw in the commercial. And
was this the best picture-in-picture of the year?
So far, perhaps, yeah.
I'm keeping up to date on new categories. I've already had it suggested funniest moment of the year, which Davey Portman has not only suggested but nominated a particular segment from Monday.
Oh, for me, it's my best moment of the year.
Yeah, best, funniest, they might go hand in hand this year.
Best entrance, you know, we can include that too.
Oh, man, that will be high up there on the year-end list. Uh-huh. But a very good match here. And afterward, Toni Storm is interviewed by Renee, and she's all down on herself. She says, I'm not surprised I lost. And she says, I'm just not ready. I wish all the women well next week. I'm just not ready. And
so does that mean she's not in the match?
I took this as the idea that she's not in the match next week.
Oh, which is fascinating because the winner...
But they didn't state that outright. But you would be left to believe, like the way she described it here, was that she would not be participating.
Okay, well, we shall see tomorrow, because the winner does get the title shot at Grand Slam, which of anybody on the roster, you would think Tony would be the one getting that spot.
Especially to do it in this character in Australia. Mm-hmm. And you can still do the bigger match down the road when she snaps out of this.
Yep.
And another thing is that this version of Toni Storm is probably really great to do a lot of the Australian media as opposed to the Timeless character. I know the Timeless character is fun, but this version of Toni Storm can be like she can talk about all her roots in Australia and such.
It's fun. I just wonder, like, will she have to do any explaining? You know, like, anyway, I would love to see that.
I think with this character, it's like you're not so much playing like the amnesia part, but it's like you can be a bit more natural in this character for that.
So what if one of the interviewers is like, hey, last time we interviewed you, you were, you seem to be.
Well, then she no sells that. So I have no recollection of
this. This is our first interview.
This is the first time I met you. Yes. And then the final segment, out comes Kenny Omega to the new theme that he introduced at Dynasty. And Ian goes over, you know, the diverticulitis being out for all of this time when we last saw him. Then the big return confronting Okada. And now here he is. And not one mention of, there was a little attack in the in-between there as well back in March. But that was omitted. And
remind me exactly what the timeline is with... he had diverticulitis.
He was out. He was out last.
The Callis attack?
No, I'm talking about the Young Bucks and Okada attacking him back in March when he showed up.
Okay, got it. So that was the last on-screen appearance of Kenny.
Yes. Until World's End.
Okay, because watching this segment, you would have totally.
Well, we'll get into this. So first of all, he has this gigantic gash above his forehead from Dynasty. This thing, like, he just sliced himself. So he's got that on his head. And then he mentions that he lost 2 feet of his intestines. And had he not checked himself into the hospital when he did, he could have been dead. And had successful surgery, and then was asking, when can I get back into the ring? And he was told, Kenny, you'd be lucky to have a normal way of life, much less wrestle the way you used to. And then his response was, Doctor, you have my life in your hands. You can call me by my real name. He said,
Tyson,
I pushed too hard and was hospitalized 4 more times at 4 weeks per time. I was like, what? You spent 4 months quietly in a hospital throughout the last year? Those are long hospital stays.
Pretty much, if we're to believe, yeah.
Man, this was the greatest endorsement for Canadian healthcare I can imagine.
Do we know he spent it in Canada?
No, I don't. It actually probably wasn't. But did you hear the story that apparently Sean Waltman also battled diverticulitis really badly last year? He was interviewed by Denise Salcedo at Raw and said, yeah, he was hospitalized and was actually in communication with Kenny Omega, who was like helping him get through it.
Okay, something tells me we all really need to be careful to not get diverticulitis here. So what do I need to do? Like eat more salads? And like, man, this sounds like the scariest thing you could get.
Yeah, and I mean, granted, we're going to be slanted towards pro wrestling, but I don't hear about diverticulitis too much among like athletes and stuff. I'm sure it's not that uncommon, but man, there seems to be like a lot of people in wrestling that have had diverticulitis.
Yeah. So again, like we're not doctors. We should actually.
Yes, we are. Yeah. We know exactly what we're talking about here.
Well, what do you think is the reason for that?
I have no idea.
Dr. Pollock.
Braden. I was going to say Alex Patel, but Braden, yeah, Braden too. He would know.
Diverticulitis.
Lysis. So he pushed too hard and he considered stopping altogether. That might be the safest option. But then what purpose would I have in life without you people? And he said, I tested this theory a few days ago and I found that purpose. And if I'm not in this ring every single week giving everything I have, then I'm not living. And I might not be the same guy that I used to be. I might not be able to do the same things I used to, but this new version is not as concerned about power, money, or revenge. And I think that last word was very obvious that we are going to bypass a major angle from last March because it just does not fit. And I'm actually, it's bad storytelling, but it is for the better if they just, because I do not think that this should be the direction they go.
So it might not be the most satisfying way, but it certainly is better than the way Dwayne closed
off his feud with
Cody. Okay.
Like that, literally, these are two like major main event angles in the same week that are pretty much, we can't say for sure with the Kenny Omega
thing. This one just delays it. And then you know what? According to The Rock,
we'll get to that in the news. I have my thoughts on that. So then he is cut off and Don Callis comes out and Omega, who is not out for revenge, is going to make an exception because he just goes to kill this man and chase him down. When Archer and Brian Cage come out and he is attacked by both of them along with Kyle Fletcher, and then they hold him and Brian Cage hits him with, as Excalibur describes it, the toxic body shot. I hope that's the new name for this punch to the abdomen of Kenny Omega, because from now until eternity, this man will be selling his midsection. And then who is to come to save Kenny Omega? It's Will Ospreay out with a chair to clear the ring as the two men wronged by Don Callis. And then they stare at one another for an uncomfortably long period of time. This show needed to dip to black a lot earlier than it did. And when it finally did, Will has left and they're sharing like looks at one another. We don't know if they're on the same page, what's going to happen. And then Kenny grabs the microphone and he's about to speak as we go to black. And that's how the show ends. So we did not get to hear from Kenny Omega again, but they did announce before they go off the air that Kenny Omega will wrestle Brian Cage next week. And just watching this of what they did here, I'm envisioning that you do something notable with, maybe it's a tag, you could do the singles, but maybe it's a tag with Kyle Fletcher in Australia, And then the big one is Omega Takeshita at the end of this whole Callis family, and maybe that's Revolution in LA.
That all sounds amazing, dude.
Like, they laid out everything here, and it starts with Brian Cage next week, and I thought this was a great job of, you laid out a bunch of stuff here. I will be very happy if they're just going to retcon this Bucks attack. You're keeping the Okada. The Okada's the long term. You're going to, and you could even, like, assign the attack was all the mastermind was Okada in that whole thing, and the Bucks are somehow, I think they should all be aligned at the end of this with Hangman. I think that's your long-term play. But for the short term, you've got this whole Callis family thing laid out, and Ospreay involved too.
Yeah, I think if Kenny had just come back to feud with the Bucks, I think there would have been some interest, but I think it also would have been met with like some groans because it's something we've seen before. But feuding with Callis is certainly something we've seen before, but the Callis family is entirely different now than what it was the last time. And I think having the promise now and the suggestion of a Kenny Omega Will Ospreay tag team sounds amazing. Okay, like they're your top two in-ring performers in the entire company, and against each other, they create magic, and I have no doubt teaming together and the creativity that Kenny has shown with his tag team partners and the creativity Ospreay has shown with his tag team partners, they could be the greatest tag team of all time. That's at least my expectation. So I hope to see some of that, especially against a Kyle Fletcher and a Takeshita, or even against Cage and Archer. I think those matches are all going to be awesome. So they have that. They have everything else you suggested, John. And it all feels fresh. It feels like a fresh direction for Kenny to come back to. Kenny and Fletcher feels like it's a big match and a great way for Fletcher to continue his ascent up the ladder, you know, but by having possibly another match of the year candidate.
Yeah, it would have been interesting had the Dynasty match not occurred. I wonder what the reaction to this would have been. Like, all of this on paper sounds incredible, but you would have had some hesitancy about, you know, just hearing this guy like unload what he's been through in the last year. What can Kenny perform at? But man, we are coming off like, I can't stop thinking about that match from Sunday. Like,
controversy aside, yeah.
It is, honestly. Like, the commentary is focused on now. It's going to be a distant memory. The legacy of that match is going to be pretty damn incredible, to the point that if that is not my match of the year, then we are going to see something utterly incredible this year, because I think that was just unreal. So I think that only amplifies the interest of this, and it's going to be super high expectations for all this stuff. But man, Kenny's coming off this amazing performance, and it looks like, you know, you're going to get some, it feels like such a shot in the arm for AEW having Kenny Omega back in the mix. And as you mentioned, a lot of fresh stuff too.
The combination of these two on screen is exactly, as I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the review, I think the perfect antidote to the type of, you know, product that the WWE seems to be really, really pitching. And I really enjoy the WWE product, my show of the year, but they don't have Kenny Omega and they don't have Will Ospreay, and they don't have the two of them interacting together either as a tag team or opponent. So this is something I really hope AEW plays well, because it could be the difference maker for them, at least I hope.
Yeah, so that concluded Dynamite and the announcements for Collision on Saturday, Mariah May against Harley Cameron, Chris Jericho against Dax Harwood, and Cope versus Bill.
Cope and Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and next Wednesday, Omega Brian Cage, Christian against Hook, the Women's Casino Gauntlet, and Moxley against Hobbs in Cincinnati. And they're doing back-to-back nights in Cincinnati next week with Collision the next night as well. So that is what is coming up there on the Dynamite side of things.
Just wanted to highlight some messages before we go over to the cafe. From apparently, we do have a couple of doctors in the chat room. Thank you guys for being in the cafe. I'm kind of kidding, of course, Dr. Google. But we do have Charlie mentioning an inflammation or infection in one or more small pouches in the digestive tract. Diverticulitis is more common after age 40. Thank you for that. E. Fallon 28 says, I had diverticulitis 20 years ago. Went away in 3 weeks with antibiotics. One cause is a high protein diet, which I guess is in line with maybe the professional wrestler's typical diet.
Yeah. So I'm thinking roughly Brock would have been around 33, 34 when he had it. Mm-hmm. And that was largely, like, it was diet related. That was his thought about it.
A high protein diet, I think, would be an understatement for a man who loves hunting as much as he does. I also wanted to make mention, we're not, because these are behind the cafe, we don't take super chats for these shows anymore, but we did receive a couple that I did not get to on the Monday, and they are from JBoba28, who sent $5 to say that for Raw. It was the first Raw I've seen from beginning to end in over 10 years overall. The show was mid, and the pacing was off. Cena's promo skills have eclipsed The Rock's. I wouldn't necessarily say that. I didn't think you had The Rock really cutting a promo on Monday. It just felt like more of a, you know,
an address.
Address, yeah, from Dwayne, board member Dwayne. And then we also have one from Scumbag Trav, who sent $5 to say, glad I was able to catch your show live. Raw was visually impressive as it gets. Awesome Netflix debut. John Way, thank you. I appreciate your work. And we appreciate you as well.
Thank you. You're our scumbag. We appreciate it very much. So at this point, we're going to be continuing the show on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Again, we're going to go over NXT from Tuesday and discuss board member Dwayne. We're also going to talk about the formation of a boxing promotion that TKO looks to be aligned with Saudi Arabia to launch this year. And we'll be going over several ratings notes, New Japan announcements. We're going to take a look at this Saturday's Battle in the Valley card and the whole lineup for New Beginning in Osaka, along with a really cool thing that they're doing with Hiroshi Tanahashi on this next tour. So for those that are watching the free portion, we thank you very much. We will be back on Friday with Rewind to SmackDown, and we're going to be continuing on over. So if you want to join along for the XL edition, postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you access for 30 days, and we're doing a special promotion through the end of the month, where if you sign up for an annual subscription before January 31st, you get a free month between now and the over the annual period. So consider joining up. And of course, Rewind Away is dropping on Thursday, prediction show on Friday. So now we head on over to the Post Wrestling Cafe. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. postwrestlingcafe.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.